When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 in top five products.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's hosted by me, Kyle Sconewill, and my longtime friend, Robbie Earle. Wow. I think this is the appropriate Owen Wilson wow time, right? Like, I'm not going to do it every week, okay? Back off. But wow. I mean, okay.
So here's the thing. Sometimes we start these off with just what's been going on in our week, sort of, you know, just kind of catching up, some small talk. But the fun thing about this week is that what's been going on in our week is Loki.
Right. We've waited so long for this.
Oh my gosh. It's what a blast. That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
What a week we just had. What a week, guys. Holy cow. I mean, okay, let's catch everybody up a second, really quickly.
Yep.
Everyone who's listening to this podcast has now hopefully watched Loki episode one, which, as you'll hear over the next hour or so, Robbie and I absolutely loved. It again just brings up that same conversation of like, how do they keep doing this?
Right.
It's just crazy to me. So we'll get into that in a second. But this week was a big game changer for your boys, for Robbie and Kyle, because not only did we get to actually see jealousy alert, by the way. So you'll guard your heart here, but we got to see Loki episode one and two ahead of time with the press screening. And I got to tell people, by the way, it's as secretive as you think it would be. And that makes it so much cooler. Like, didn't you feel like you were Mission Impossible trying to create your account?
I felt like it's probably easier to get a hold of the nuclear codes than it is to get into that screener.
I kid you not. You make an account. You have to set up a question. They text you. And then every time you log in, you have to get a phone call that gives you like a secret code. Then when you get in, it's watermarked with your name on it. So I'm not going to lie to you.
And the date.
And the date.
The date changes every day, which has to, so it's like it updates every time. It's like, It's very much tethered to your exact experience so that they know not only that it's you if it's shared, but exactly when it was that you watched and shared it. It's intense.
Any of our listeners out there that have ever had screeners before, they're probably laughing at like, yeah, this is all normal, ha. But for you and I, and for people that haven't heard of this, it was pretty cool.
Right.
And it was pretty complicated to get in, but once we got in, yeah, like we've seen the first two episodes of Loki, and it was so cool and so much fun, and it's really good. So
it was also hilarious because they put an expiration date on these things.
Yes.
And as it happens, the weekend when we received the link, and you know, we didn't know exactly when we were going to get it.
Right. We thought it'd be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, in which case right. You'd be home.
Except I was camping in the middle of the Shenandoah National Park and had almost no cell service. Oh, it was great. Except, yeah, of all the time. So I'm like, I mean, 24 hours, I think, I just didn't have a single bar. And
literally,
then all of a sudden, like, And then I'm back and I start getting all these texts from you.
Me and Robbie and our manager have a group text. And yeah, I was like, Robbie's phone must be off because I've probably sent, what, 110? And he's not responding about like, holy cow, we have access right now. You can watch it. Why aren't you seeing it? Have you not logged in? What's wrong with your thing? Oh my goodness, it expires, Robbie. Are you going to be able to watch it? What are we going to do if you can't see it? Wah! Like, and then finally, like a day later, you called me. You're like, I have no service. I'm like, what a terrible time. But don't worry. We got it figured out. The expiration date held true. You had time to get home to still see it.
Yep.
We've both watched episode one multiple times. And if you're listening to this, we've now probably watched it on actual Disney Plus as well on Wednesday with you guys.
Yep.
So we feel prepared to talk about it. But that wasn't the only thing last week. That's the crazy thing. It's like, oh, part of that screener access was because we got to attend the Loki virtual press conference. Now, my understanding is at some point, maybe these won't always be virtual. I don't know that. So that'll be a whole new dynamic if we ever actually physically go. But yeah, that was so much fun too. Literally, Robbie and I are sitting there listening to an hour of Kevin Feige, like Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, the whole cast, pretty much. Michael Waldron, the writer, Kate Herron, the director, they're all there. And we got to listen to them talk about the show. And if you had told us 2 years ago that we'd ever even be in the same like vicinity as Kevin, I would have thought you were insane. So last week was a big week for us. I'm not going to lie to you.
Man. And you and I talked about this. This is not to belittle anything that's come before or anything that comes after. But you and I have often discussed, like, just having seen interviews, having sort of read different articles. Like, there are folks within the MCU. I think in general, the actors in the MCU are pretty invested in the stories and in the projects. Like, and even just in the universe as a whole. And I think that's one of the things that Kevin almost kind of screens for when he's bringing people in, and I think you can feel that. However, there are people that are invested, and then there are people that are invested.
Yes.
And I, you had always kind of told me that your understanding was that Tom was one of these guys that like really cares about it and really knows his stuff, that like really brings almost the kind of like the same intensity, the same focus with which I think he had always brought to like theatrical projects to all of these things, and like almost like method at times. And man, in this press conference, it is just, I have to imagine it's a unique thing because Tom is talking about the Loki character as someone who is like truly inhabited it. Like, he's talked about, like, he's going into, like, the craziest details about, like, which costumes he's worn and at which times and the significance of those and the significance of all these different pieces, these things that maybe we thought were just aesthetic but that he attached, like, kind of more meaning to. And then the other thing is just, I was just wowed because he was kind of rattling off all these comic creator names, right?
Yes.
Like, these folks, not even just like the famous guys. Like if you're talking Thor, you probably talk like Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Walter Simonson. But like he goes all the way from like Lee Kirby all the way up to like Daniel Kibblesmith, who just wrote this like 5-issue Loki miniseries in like 2019.
Well, in that context, he was giving shout outs to people who have spoken into his character. And he also gave a shout out to the Thor 1 writer, by the way.
I noticed that, which I loved. Well, I think he talked about each kind of writer team and director team that kind of moved the ball forward and allowed the character to grow in certain ways. And it really is just, it's so cool because I've been reading some of the different reviews and things about Loki. And I think by and large, not only have they been positive, but I think people are super, super impressed with Hiddleston's performance. Although I've seen a lot of people say that that's one of those things where he's kind of been pretty consistently great from early on, especially from Avengers onward. But yeah, I just think that's a really rare thing. Like when you're looking at franchises like this, I think sometimes you can see people view it as a paycheck. You know, and then there's other kind of, they have passion projects, which is totally fine, right? Like, I totally get that. That some people, they make the big budget thing, and then they get to go and kind of make the indie film that they want to make. But I love how much that is just not the case with him.
Okay. You talked about how Kevin must screen for that stuff. I agree, because think about what you just said and how that also applies to Henry Jackman, our interview we did last week, 2 weeks ago, whatever. Because
yeah,
we talked
so
about
true.
How he could have just collected a paycheck and get in and out. But like, I'm realizing we've said that exact same thing for, you know, 20 different people in the MCU at this point, that they really, right. really care. And you know how sensitive I am to that specifically, right? I've told mm-hmm. you that I like watching the behind the scenes stuff because it confirms, did they pour themselves into it like I want them to, like I am. And right. for the most part, everyone in the MCU does. But one of my takeaways from the press conference, like you're saying, is that Tom Hiddleston seems to be kind of next level. And you're referencing a story that I had told you where I found this video of, like, I think it was Avengers trivia or Avengers Family Feud or something. And there was like 10 of the main Avengers doing that game show. And I remember watching it and my takeaway being, wow, everyone knows their stuff, but Tom Hiddleston's like mopping the floor with them. You know, he knew... He could name the Infinity Stones off the bat, whereas some of the other actors were like, oh, I got to think about it a second. You know, he just knew all the,
right.
he knew all his stuff. So when Disney sent the press invite, they also sent a production book that included this little bit about what they called Loki lectures. And that immediately yeah. caught my eye, right? I sent it to you because that was confirming what I had always thought, which is that Tom Hiddleston got so invested into filling in all the other new actors on like MCU history and Loki, you know, aura. Why is Loki doing this? Where is it coming from? Why does he look like this? Like, Tom got so into filling in everyone else, they literally gave it a name, Loki Lectures. So to kind of tie up this whole thing, what was super cool for you and I was, how many people do you think were there? We had no way to see how many people were attending this thing.
Right.
Could have been dozens. I mean, hundreds. I don't know. And so all we could do is insert a chat question. And your boy, Kyle Scodel's question got read out loud, dude. It's unbelievable. So Kevin Feige and Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson have heard Kyle Scodel now, which is bucket list. But my question was about those Loki lectures to tie us all together and where'd those come from. And my question was that because you know how much I love that behind the scenes mm-hmm. knowledge. Can I say two other quick takeaways from the press conference? One,
yes.
You know, we always talk about this, but aren't you just struck by Kevin's passion? I mean, I don't know in the history of film if there could have been a better fit than Kevin Feige to run all of the Marvel Universe.
I mean, clearly not. Yeah, I mean, It's funny because it's one of those things. This is something where I'm not going to be a broken record, but because again, looking at some of the reviews, it's always funny. There's a lot of condescension when it comes to new Marvel products, especially among kind of more established TV film critics. And I get it, right? It's a franchise thing, and I know how that goes. But it's funny because sometimes people are just like, oh, well, you know, it's a Marvel thing, and they almost take this stuff for granted that it's like. Well, sure. I mean, it's Marvel and it's like really good, but it's just, you look at other franchises that just aren't. Like, how many franchises just don't have near that consistency? Like, I don't think anybody, and I don't want to put it all on Kevin because I'm sure Kevin would say, you know, there are a ton of creative folks, you know, like,
right.
and you look back from the very beginning, like whenever we were doing the rewatch and I was watching Thor, you notice like there are folks that have been on board from really, really early that are still on board every project. But yeah, I totally agree. Like, you see that kind of come to life there in the press conference when he's talking and he seems so happy to be there. And it seems, again, like something I would imagine has to be pretty rare among executives of his stature.
So rare. You can tell he's so passionate and he cares about every single thing he's talking about. You can tell that he's also knowledgeable because he knows all the info, like not everyone does. But then mm-hmm. he's still got this grace and this like warmth to him. So it's inviting.
Yeah.
And then he still carries himself with an awe toward the actual actors and talent. So it's
right.
not like he comes off as above the writers or the actors.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
he's like, I can't do that. It's so cool that my passion of getting to see, you know, Loki come to life is now the sitting right in front of me. And he's like
right.
geeking out about that still. It's really cool.
And I loved it because like someone asked the question, you know, I've never thought that the Thor comics were particularly funny. You know, when was that? Is that a decision you made, or when did you feel like that turn kind of came about? And his answer to your point was so gracious, because on the one hand, he was like, well, I disagree. Like, I think that comics they writers have kind of consistently found Thor to be funny. And you know, like, which I think is true. Like, they're going all the way back. So, one, I like that he wasn't like, well, yeah, you know, we really took it and made it way, way better, way funnier. And the comics were really stilted or whatever. But then, yeah, the next level, he's like, but the thing is, also, you know, Mr. Hemsworth and Mr. Hiddleston are both just tremendously talented comedic actors. So it wasn't so much us saying, well, this is the direction we need to go, as much as that was just naturally there and was kind of coming out more and more as they were more and more comfortable in the world. And just took several opportunities to just kind of lift up all of these different sort of creative folks around him. And I just think, man, yeah, like what a kind of consummate professional, and what a great look for someone that is at the helm of the most lucrative film franchise in the history of entertainment.
Right.
To have so much so much humility that seems legitimate, not false.
Right. Okay, my last takeaway from the press conference, and then we'll move on. Like I said before, I haven't attended these other press conferences, so I'm sure there's always a level of flattery from everyone that's normal.
Sure.
But I know that every time you make a movie or a show, there's an entire team that does it. There's writers, there's directors, there's Kevin as a producer, you know, executive producer, there's actors, et cetera. But I was struck by how often they reference that this show, Loki, is due to Kate Herron, the director.
Yeah.
In the other shows, I think sometimes you can like we gave a ton of credit to Jack Schaefer for WandaVision as the writer and the creator, but not as much to Matt Shackman, the director. But multiple people kept bringing it back to Kate for this show. They asked one person, what was your influence for this movie? Like, what did you draw from? And Kevin Feige jumped in and said, honestly, without being funny, Kate was our influence. Like, she came to us and said, here's like the entire vision of how I think the show could work. And he said she had everything laid out so impressively that they were like,
right,
we have to do this. Like, she's so into this. And then when they actually got to Kate, Kate said, yeah, like the second I heard there was an opening for Loki, I had my agent call Marvel every day saying, please give me the project. Like, I have a perfect plan for it. And then when they cut to like Owen Wilson, they asked him like, how did you know, what convinced you to join the MCU? And he said specifically, well, it didn't take much convincing, first of all. But second of all, it was the conversation I had with Kate, how she had this image for this character and this vision. And did you notice how many times they kept bringing it back to Kate being the driving force of this? And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. Well, and even Michael Waldron, who I'm excited to talk about more in a second, as we get into the show,
is the
head writer and seen as I think he's listed also as the creator of the show. They were asking about certain scenes and certain ideas, and he kept saying, well, you know, like I was going to kind of come at it from this way. And then I had a conversation with Kate and we went more in this direction or whatever, like several times kind of made those sorts of comments. So yeah, you're right. I think if people are a fan of this show, it seems like they're a fan of what Kate Herron did.
No doubt. So it was a blast. We've had a huge week, but the fun part for us is we're literally just starting. We now get to do 6 more weeks of Loki coverage. So hang on to your butts. This is going to be so much fun. Before we jump in, let me give a quick word on how you guys can support us, because you've been so helpful thus far. And Robbie and I are excited with where this thing can go. Oh my goodness. So as always, make sure that you're listening to the podcast. That is the first way you can really support us. It helps us a lot. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's where our listenership comes from. That's where our numbers come from. So we appreciate that. You can listen to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere, right? You can also view us on YouTube if you want to watch our interview episodes, okay? Subscribe to us there. And don't forget, you can subscribe and follow on Apple and Spotify and all those places so that you get your podcasts easier. You can also share our podcast. And what we mean by that is tell your friends about it, post about it on social media, message us on social media at the FFW Podcast, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, etc.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most fun things, I think, especially in the Disney Plus era, has been, as these shows sort of move into the cultural zeitgeist, folks that have either been on board since the rewatch or came in kind of early, as friends of theirs start watching the shows, it's been really cool when people also kind of turn them on to the podcast. Then we have people message us saying that, you know, so-and-so sent them the link or whatever, you know, friends of friends. And it's a really cool thing to see the community sort of build organically. And so as much as we're happy for listeners to come around, however they come around, we do really love when you guys share, and it means a ton to us.
Well, and speaking of that, Robbie, announcement time. Ding, 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 ding. Let's go. Announcement time. Here we go. Breaking news.
We're going to start editing in some new sound effects.
Exactly. Breaking news sound and a bell. Okay. Every avenue that we have launched to stay in touch with you guys, we've done with a purpose, right? We built our website to be our hub and to allow you guys to directly email us, message us through there and learn more about it, et cetera. When we join Twitter, it's because we want to have more conversations with you that are quick. We want to post the news when it comes out, all of that. Mm-hmm. For example, something we got to get to, like the Eternals trailer comes out. We post that.
Right.
Or we just saw that Thor Love and Thunder is finally wrapped filming, by the way. Chris Hemsworth's biceps. Are you kidding
me?
Go to our Twitter. You can see the photo that he posted. I mean, if you thought Chris Hemsworth was jacked before, don't look at this photo then. He looks like an actual bodybuilder. It's kind of scary.
It's wild. I was looking, again, whenever I was watching Thor and seeing him in the beginning, like, it's crazy. Because I remember seeing Thor in theaters and being like, I think this might be the most, like, perfect, like, male specimen I've ever seen. And then it's crazy how, like, every time he's like, nope, I'm like, and now I think he's literally, like, twice as big as he was when he started, if not more.
He's looking more and more like the actual Thor emoji, like the character, like the cartoon character, how it looks like a joke, but he actually looks that large. So that's why we kind of had Twitter, right, for conversations. Instagram has been so much fun for us because we love to post cool pictures. We get to post some cool artwork of these movies that Robbie finds from other creators. And then you guys message us on there and the comments are really awesome. And then YouTube, by the way, as we said, subscribe was new for us because now you can watch full-length videos of those interviews. So all that's been really fun. But now we are finally announcing a Friends from Work Slack channel. Robbie, what is a Slack channel?
Great question. Well, you know, given that the podcast is called Friends from Work, we thought that a really appropriate new avenue here is to have a place where you can chat, sort of like you would with your friends from work, except with these friends from work. It's basically a community where you'll join. We're going to post the link in our show notes. If you're not familiar with Slack, it's a super easy platform. There will be several different channels, sort of topically, where you can jump in. And what's really fun about this is, like what Kyle's saying, we have all these avenues where you guys have learned to reach out to us and where we can send things out to y'all, and we love that, but we've never had a great avenue where y'all can communicate with each other.
Right.
And that's really what the Friends from Work Slack is all about.
It's like a message board of sorts where you're going to have categories. And so, like, we'll have one on there that's Loki spoilers. So don't click on if you haven't seen Loki. But if you have seen Loki, you can run to our Friends from Work Slack, post your theories. Because sometimes your theories are so cool that we want you guys to see each other's theories. Like, we're reading them, but you're not seeing them. And full disclosure, this is something that Robbie and I debated for a long time, putting behind a paywall, like a Patreon or something, because we think it's a really, really cool thing for you guys to connect. But we kind of ultimately decided, like, we love this community that we're building, and so we want it to be all-inclusive. If you want to be a part of the Friends from Work community, we're not going to charge you to do that. So join our Slack for free and interact with each other on there. We can't wait. Robbie and I are already on there. So is Candace and Annika. We're ready to chime in when we need to. Let's have our theories, our long, lengthy message type theories on Slack. Now, and again, that's not belittling Instagram or Twitter. Like, we still want you to follow us there at the FFW podcast because we still post fun things there. We'll still go through your messages. We'll still go through your comments. We try to respond to those. It's so much fun. I think this will just be a new fun layer, especially when we get to a show like you guys have seen in episode one, like Loki, that's kind of, you know, cliffhanger-y. This is what a better place to post your theories than right here. And again, the emphasis being on, we want you guys to meet each other. Because I say this a lot, but we've actually formed relationships with some of our listeners, Robbie, right? I mean, like, I know these people by name now, and it would be fun for you guys to know each other. So, Friends from Work Slack, as Robbie said, we're going to post it in the show notes. There's going to be an actual link there. I'm sure we'll find other ways to post it on other social media platforms and stuff.
Well, and the thing is, once you're a part of it, you'll be able to then email a link or text a link to whoever else. So it can be a very organic thing where if you're in and you know someone else who maybe isn't even familiar with the podcast, but you know that they would, one, enjoy the show, and two, enjoy kind of being a part of the group and engaging in the discussion, you can just send the link on, right? So it's going to be something that's hopefully really easy to share and happens like pretty naturally and grows into the kind of community there that we've already been so happy to experience in all these other places.
And I don't need to say this because our community is so great, but obviously it goes without saying, be kind to each other. If you're mean to each other, if you say inappropriate things, we're going to have to ban you from it. So
right.
I'm not worried about that with this community, but I just got to give that disclaimer. Like, let's have fun doing this together. It's supposed to be fun, people. If anything, that's what Robbie and I want this podcast to do, is bring you more joy with these films. The last thing you can do to support us, so you can listen, you can share, you can follow us on all those socials, et cetera. The last thing is you can financially support us, which would be a huge help to Robbie and I. Two ways to do that. One, we have Friends from Work t-shirts available on our website, theffwpodcast.com, where if you missed that somehow 2 weeks ago, they are available now. I ship them to you with a little thank you card. It's really fun. The shirt is soft. It's comfortable. It looks cool. We're excited about that. And we hope to add more merch as we go along. So theffwpodcast.com/shop. Get your t-shirt there. Get it now. Be cool. Secondly, we also have a donate tab if you just want to donate us money that helps support the podcast and helps us open more doors for future opportunities. So listen, share, follow us, and financially support. Thank you guys for that quick word. Now, let's get into Loki episode one. Are you kidding me? Here we go, baby.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so very quickly, we've already talked about some of these folks, but Loki is created by Michael Waldron, who is also the head writer. It is directed by Kate Herron. It stars Tom Hiddleston, Owen Wilson, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, and Wunmi Mosaku. And the composer, which people are just going to think we always think this, but holy cow, Kyle, Natalie Holt's music here is just incredible.
So different.
Like, she's new to the MCU. It's so different, but you know, it also takes some of the parts that I love the most about what Mark Mothersbaugh introduced into the Thor sort of musical universe there in Ragnarok. And then Silvestri, right, sort of adapted some of that into some of the Thor scenes in Endgame in particular.
A lot of the solo
she's taking
cello
some
stuff.
Of that. Yeah. Man, it's great. And it's perfect. It's like it can be a little sinister at times. It can be really sad at times, which is kind of a fun. That's something we'll have to talk about, is sort of the way that this show balances tone in some really interesting ways, maybe similar to WandaVision. That's our creative team here. Kyle, let's talk about
let's do it.
Loki episode
let's
one.
Do it. I can't believe we're saying that. Let's go. As I was watching it, three things kind of came to me the whole time I'm watching. One is I want to talk about the review of the show just quality-wise, okay? I want to work that in there. Secondly, we need to talk about the plot in the greater MCU. And then thirdly, I just had some questions that I legitimately don't know and I haven't gotten a chance to ask you yet. And maybe our listeners will know, and maybe you'll know from comics. Like, I don't know. So anyways, I mean, review-wise, I again was just blown away by how quality it is. I mean,
yeah,
right away, this is an A-level show again. This is an A-level. There's no concerns visually. There's no concerns with the acting. There's no concerns with the writing. There's no concerns with the cinematography. Like, let's just remove all that concern. They're just, again, this is a huge budget. Like, they spent money. This is pro. I mean, you're not going to find a higher quality show, like series.
Well, and I would say, like, it's the most ambitious effects-wise of any of these Disney Plus shows. Like, it's
never feels weird.
Exactly. Like, it's doing a lot from the very beginning. And it feels, yeah, it feels totally top tier quality, exactly on par with any MCU film.
Same deal as other shows where in the press conference, they talked about how they built a lot of these sets. A lot of these sets are real places that they actually built. Mm-hmm. And although that maybe confines the cameraman to different angles than he was originally anticipating, I think it gives that practical, realistic, grounded vibe again. So it just works in all of those ways. My second takeaway from a review perspective, besides the fact that it's just a quality A show, is, man, it's still got that Marvel thing where it's funny, it has heart, and the chemistry just works. Like, the second I see Owen Wilson and Tom Hiddleston on stage, I'm in. I don't know about you. I was in. This was like a level up from even Falcon Winter Soldier. Like, I had no concerns with how they were able to bounce off each other. It's funny. It's witty. The writing goes into that. I loved it.
So I should say, and we'll talk more about Owen Wilson as we get into it, but I am also a huge Owen Wilson fan.
Some
of my favorite movies have Owen Wilson. Right. But I will say, I wasn't hesitant about the choice to cast him. Something like the little promos, I was always like, I wonder if this is, it just didn't hit as well for me as I was hoping it would. But once I saw, like, in the context of the show, like, from his very first scene, but especially his scenes with Tom, it's perfect. Like, he fits in immediately in a way that I think even not a ton of MCU actors have. Like, often, right, don't we talk about how sometimes it takes folks a bit to feel settled in? We talked that a bit with some of the kind of early moments of Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie in Falcon Winter Soldier, who they were, you know, even kind of pros at that point within the MCU. And we've talked about how like early on, even we thought like Hemsworth and Hiddleston weren't totally locked in like the first Thor film.
Larson. Like, there's Brie Larson, a lot of people that don't just feel right away, you know, settled in at home.
That are, by the way, all incredible actors, right? Like, it's not that we're disparaging their abilities there, but I think that it's sort of a unique thing. Like, you're right. The Marvel tone is kind of this exact balance that, like, you know when they're hitting it and you know when they're not. And he's just immediately hitting it, and everything we've seen so far just continues to.
Let's camp on Owen Wilson here for a second. I love that we're starting here. Because you're right, on paper, that's a very bold casting. If you look at his filmography, I think of Owen Wilson, I think of rom-com, you know, comedic, trashy, funny movies, you know? Think Wedding Crashers. That is not the vibe for a character like Mobius on paper. But Owen Wilson is in the category of actor, to me, kind of like Paul Rudd, where he's just instantly likable. Nobody dislikes him. There's a warmth he brings that the second you see him, you're drawn in. And on like a third rewatch of this episode, that's interesting to me. And here's why. When my wife saw the episode, one of her big takeaways was that she felt really sad for Loki. Now, obviously, I did too. But when you view through that lens, in a way, Owen Wilson is coming on screen and at times actually poking at one of the more beloved characters in Loki in the MCU. Now, I know Loki's kind of a villain or an anti-hero at times, but there's a scene specifically where he's like, no, you are meant to cause pain. That's how it always has been, how it always is. He's kind of yelling. And like, in a way, there should be some part of you that's turned off to his character.
I mean, well, yeah, he says—
Do you see what I'm getting at? But with Owen Wilson—
Yeah, he's like, for someone who's destined to rule, you sure do lose a lot.
Right, and he belittles Loki a decent amount of times, and if that wasn't played right, if it wasn't Owen Wilson, I think there'd be a hesitation for me to be like, whoa, bro, back off a little bit.
Yeah.
But because he's so warm and I like him, it's like the same thing could be said for Paul Rudd, I think. Because of that, it's like this perfect fit where he's funny— And you instantly care about Mobius. Like, I care about Mobius. I want to know what happens to Mobius. I'm fascinated to find out. And yet, he's also still got this, like, edge to him that makes him kind of cool. Like, he's not just going to get walked over by Loki.
Right.
What a weird balance to find.
Yeah, no, totally. It reminds me of something that Matthew Berry brought up in our interview, which, by the way, if you haven't heard, is still particularly timely because Matthew Berry makes a little appearance here in Loki.
Yeah, right.
With that same opening scene there. But he talks about how that very first scene in Iron Man, you know, when he's in the Humvee, how anyone, like, if you played that incorrectly, he immediately comes off as like an unlikable character because right. he is like, I mean, he's supposed to be kind of a jerk, right? But like Robert Downey Jr. has such this kind of winsome personality that he brings to it that within a couple minutes, I mean, like really, really quickly, not only do you have a real sense for who the character is, but you also are kind of immediately endeared to him. And obviously Owen Wilson is not going to be like the next core of the MCU like Robert Downey Jr. was. But I think it was a similar thing where like within a few minutes of him being on screen, I was like, oh man, this is going to work really well. Like I'm going to be really into wherever this particular character goes.
And then kind of bouncing off that, where I think Marvel is so good, I've said this before in multiple episodes, is not only did Owen Wilson fit perfectly, and not only that, but Tom Hiddleston's performance was remarkable. And this is coming from somebody who has not always been as high on Loki as some other people. Mm-hmm. You know, me. I felt a little about him in Thor 1. He grew on me a little bit in Avengers, but I was never, you know, championing Loki. But this was a remarkable Tom Hiddleston performance.
Right.
The scene where he's watching his future and his past and just having to react to that, his emotions with that, is impressive. That's hard acting. It's very right. Matthew McConaughey and Interstellar type, you know, watching his home videos, you know. That's what it made me think of. But what I want to add is that where Marvel is so good is all the other characters, too, are so good. That's what I've said right. The Mandalorian struggles with sometimes. Is like they go to these side characters, I'm like, okay, I don't buy that performance, but somehow in the MCU, I don't know if it's Kevin, I don't know if it's the writing, or is it right. Kate Herron, they don't let any of the side characters be bad. They're always good.
Right.
I call them side characters. I mean, some of them are still main characters, like Judge Renslayer. Like, it's just, mm-hmm. just add it to the list. Everyone who shows up in these shows is good.
As an aside, people might recognize Gugu from one of my favorite episodes of television, which is San Junipero. It's like season 3 of Black Mirror. Have you seen that, Kyle?
No.
Oh man, it's so good. She's one of these, again, like just every time I've seen her pop up in things, she kind of immediately captivates. And that's another one where, so she in the, before I forget, in the press conference, because that is a character that has some roots in the comics. You know, we've talked about how these shows so far have been kind of great origin story moments for certain characters, like famously with Wanda, who we thought didn't even need an origin story, right? But then like in that same series, kind of Monica mm-hmm. Rambeau, and to some degree like John Walker and Foz. And then here she talked about, you know, she was asked a question about whether she did a lot of comics reading and kind of if she was trying to get a sense of who the character was then. And she said that this is very much an origin story for this character. And so that intrigues me because it sort of seems to imply that maybe there's some kind of future, or that character is leading to something else that we're maybe not yet aware of. But again, it's something I'm excited about because you're right. It's like there are just kind of a couple of characters at play here, but every one I think is right. really strong, and she's near the top
of
that
list.
Think
about what
me.
You just said. Marvel has always been so good at that. Hey, we're going to have a Black Panther movie, so let's introduce him in Civil War, or Spider-Man. We're going to get Spider-Man, so right. let's have him show up as a big reveal. But then even on smaller levels, like you just said, hey, we're going to have a show about a new Captain America. Well, let's introduce John Walker because that can spin into another character show. Who's to say that right. this judge isn't going to eventually become a larger character and that this is just her origin story, like you're saying? Or like you said, Monica Rambeau.
Right.
Did we get a ton on Monica Rambeau? No. But are we going to? Yes. And that's kind of fun how they do that always.
Well, and that's kind of the perfect segue to one of the things that I was so impressed by with this show. Talking about how, you know, earlier, how Tom seems to be kind of so at home in the MCU and so into it. Like, this show is, like, I think more than either of the prior shows that we've gotten, they clearly, like, did their MCU homework and delved into the past in a way where they're now able to, like, explore the future on, like, a macro level that also neither of the other shows did. Like, I feel like one of the things we talked about a lot, like, we harped over and over and over again, if you've listened to our WandaVision coverage, about how everyone kept wanting to make it this larger thing, and it was about the X-Men, and it was about the multiverse.
Yes.
And I know really, like, it was an intimate show about Wanda, right?
That.
And that's what
it's
made it so great.
Wanda and Vision, guys. Right. Stop trying to make it something it's not. But this show,
but
you can make it something. You're allowed to now.
Yes. I mean, and that's what's so fun, right? Because they're the different, like, Loki, unlike Wanda, had such a clear arc, like, all the way through. I mean, we talked about that with Infinity
right.
War, and that's
part
of the reason
point.
Why I think we were both a little bit uneasy about them even right. having a Loki show.
Yep.
And so it's not so much they have to find a way to dig deeper into that character, although they definitely do in some astounding ways, but also it gives them an avenue through which to really, like, widen the scope of the MCU in kind of
yeah.
like, I mean, maybe as much as any single project has, which I know is a bold thing to say,
okay.
but like, no, I'm not saying it's like, but think about it. What other single movie or project from
okay.
the MCU has expanded its scope as much as, like, look at all of the multiple timelines and people policing.
Okay, first off, I have a rule on this podcast, which is I don't want to start comparing to other things on the first episode. Give me at least 4 more episodes to make a judgment when I start comparing how impactful is it, or, like, comparing it to WandaVision. I'm not going down that road yet. You're right, though. It is crazy, the things it looks like they're dealing with. And I love that point you said, which is that we never really got a huge origin story with Wanda, and especially not an origin story of the love of Wanda and Vision. We had seen a few scenes,
right.
but that was really it, right? So that's why we kept telling people, guys, like, let's enjoy that this is about Wanda and Vision and what we get to learn about them. How fun is that, you know? But yeah, I'm watching this,
right.
and my first thing is like, yeah, all right, it's time to talk about the multiverse. Because that's such a good point. Loki's kind of had his origin. We have an entire start,
mm-hmm.
middle, and end to his character already. So at this point, they need to find new ways to explore it. And so, yeah, I'm totally on board
right.
with you. Just last note on the quality, and then we'll talk about the plot. What's crazy to me is, if you listen to this podcast, like, you gotta know I am not the guy that just says everything's amazing just because. Like, I don't have that background. So I'm fully prepared to sit here and go, wow, Marvel missed one. You know, this is a bummer. They kind of whiffed on this one. It wasn't very good. And just, again, I'm
right.
just shocked that they can come up with another thing that's so creative, so funny, so well acted, so well written, so visually stunning. And here I am being like, yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
even go listen to my Falcon and Winter Soldier coverage. Like, you'll hear me poke at some things. You'll hear me bring up
yeah,
some concerns.
Sure. Well, I mean, and we both ranked Falcon Winter Soldier, like, fairly low, all
yeah.
things considered, right? Like,
using the barometer.
Again, we love
exactly,
all this stuff,
exactly.
But
using the barometer that we love it all.
Right, right. But no, I mean, I wanted to say, like, before we kind of leave review portion here, I think people took note of this. Like, there were things about Falcon Winter Soldier that I loved, like, I really loved. And I talked about that in our kind of wrap-up episode. But I was always pretty upfront that I thought it was a step down from WandaVision, like, ultimately, and I ranked it that way. And even on WandaVision, I don't think that I said what I'm about to say now, whereas whatever happens with Loki, you know, like, I'm totally with you. Like, it could go down a direction I'm not thinking of. It could be something that I like a lot less than I'm thinking I will right now. And that's why I think some of the reviews that I've read, there are, like, we'll have to get into, but I feel like don't even make any sense unless you've seen the whole thing. Like, I've seen people talk about things that they don't properly address. And I'm like, well, we're an episode or two episodes in. But I will say, looking at the first episode, I turned to Candace after I watched this, and I told her, I think this might be one of the best pilots, if you want to call it that, that I've ever seen. Like, there are a couple of, like, first episodes of shows that I love so much, like, in the way that they kind of set out the DNA of the show. They immediately hook you with whatever the premise is. And I think that, like, that's a really tough thing to do, but it's also, like, what the first episode kind of has to do. And I think that's one of the reasons why, like, WandaVision was sort of unique, right? Because each episode for the longest time was such its own thing that it's not like they could really lay out a ton in that first, like, 20-minute 50s style thing. And Falcon Winter Soldier, I thought the first episode was really fun, and we talked about that in high quality. But I think this is, like, a whole another level in terms of how creative it is, in terms of how different, like, the ideas it's bringing up are. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, like, it's super, like, it's going into some, like,
real
philosophical stuff, and it's hilarious. And, like, the thing that I was so excited about, like, whenever I saw Michael Waldron was on board, I'm a big fan of what he's done on Rick and Morty, on what he did on Community, and it's because he kind of embraces this sort of absurdist humor, but at the same time, it's a mix of that with this, like, addressing some, like, really interesting and, like, sometimes kind of, like, dark issues and questions, and chasing those down in ways that can lead you into some, like, really serious conversations. And he does all that so well here, Kyle. It is, like, if you were to say, and Candace gives me a hard time for this all the time, like, if you were to, like, to try to paint a picture of, like, what exactly my alley, like,
what's your scene?
This is right up my alley. Like, this is exactly what it is.
It's funny because you also have an alley for the Captain America thing, which is very different from this.
For sure. No, and that's fair. And those are kind of different things in terms of just the way that I've connected to that certain kind of mythos. But yeah, this is, like, sort of across any project that I'm watching, like, the writing wise, which is something that I pay a lot of attention to. This is just kind of right where I hoped it would be. And I want to say, like you, maybe more than with either of the prior two shows, whenever this show was announced, I was kind of like, I've liked Loki's story. I've liked where it's gone. I don't really see how this can move the MCU forward. I feel like this is going to be kind of regressive because it's going to be just sort of fan service-y of, like, everyone loves Loki. Everyone loves Tom Hiddleston. Let's just kind of play around with that some more. And so I was not coming into this just, like, ready to be blown away necessarily. So I'm with you. Like, I came by it honestly, I guess. Like, I am just kind of as amazed as anyone with how good it is.
You, somewhere in that entire Robbie rant, which I loved, you said creative. And that's funny because one of my first notes is so creative, and it's underlined. It got me thinking about the vibe of the show. That creativity kind of feels Guardians-esque, right? We're like, we're getting a whole new planet.
Yeah.
And the visualization of what that could look like and feel like and sound like and what the people there are like, it's really bold. I mean, it's really creative. It's like how I felt, you know, one of the best things about Guardians was how much depth they gave to all those other planets. Remember we ripped the other planets in Thor, right? Every other planet that Thor goes to is awful until a little longer, you know, and then Guardians comes around and it's like, oh, Xandar is cool. It you know, it's different, and it's like, you know, it's things we recognize. And then the MCU gets really, really good at
right.
it, you know, Titan and Neva D'Leer.
Yeah.
And there's all kinds of creative, bold swings. But this is another one where it's like, this is totally different. It's kind of like a Coruscant feeling city vibe. But I also just got I got a little Ragnarok vibes on Sakaar, kind of. And I kind of got Stranger Things vibes almost, and almost a little Blade Runner 2049 kind of in some of the shots and the colors. And it was just, almost like a detective vibe thrown in there too. It was very creative and very new, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, and was your takeaway that, because I can't remember if this is said explicitly, he looks out and it's this massive city. My sense is that kind of each little hub is dealing with like its own planet or like section of a galaxy, and then dealing with the timelines, like, right, like everyone there is like humanoid and seems to be looking purely at Earth.
Could be.
And so is the idea that like everyone, because
he says like nightmares, that's a different district or whatever.
Right. Oh yeah, that's true. So maybe it's even broader than that. I mean, it is a massive kind of cityscape they're looking out on. So it seems almost like it would be kind of infinite.
What's funny is I don't know if we're supposed to go there yet with that, if that makes sense. Like, I think they were supposed to show you how intricate and massive this thing is, but I don't know that you're supposed to draw conclusions that this is the Earth division, although they only, you know, are dealing with Earth stuff at the moment. Right. So maybe.
Like, we didn't see any, like, aliens, you know, like in the way that we would with Guardians or Ragnarok.
True. Okay, let's kind of go through this. I loved starting with the New York throwback. Again, I can't help it, guys. Okay, I can't help it. I said I'm like Pavlov's dogs at this point. It's fun.
That's a little bit of me coming out in you there.
Yeah, but it's just fun to, again, just constantly give these moments more impact by showing them again. And, I mean, I'm sure they're doing the intro a little bit in a way to catch people up who haven't seen all these movies or aren't like us and don't remember everything about it. But, you know, right after you get the New York scene, you get that first scene of the TVA taking Loki. And I'm not going to go scene by scene here. But one of the things I thought was really interesting is, again, the creation of these reset charges, I thought the way they explained the timeline thing, the multiverse thing, and how they get rid of it. And if you missed that, by the way, my understanding is whenever an event happens that the timekeepers deem was not supposed to happen, a branch starts forming off of the reality we know, like a tree. But if the TVA gets there soon enough and wipes, slash what they keep saying, prune, I think, or what's the word they keep using, but trims down by resetting with these charges what happened there, time then can mend itself and close off that branch. And they had to do some research on how to handle this, obviously, because they know the MCU in Endgame has already dealt with time travel. Right. So I like that just head on, we're dealing with it right away, with the reset charges, with the dumb instructional video, and with what Loki even says to the judge when he says, like, you know, shouldn't you be grabbing the Avengers? Because they're the ones that time traveled. And we'll get into that in a second. My point is, I do like the thought that has gone into explaining time travel. Because like we've said before in this podcast, whenever you dive into time travel, it can get a little sticky because our brains don't really fathom it, right?
Well, and it can cheapen things, but I really like the way, like I've seen people say this from kind of day one when Endgame came out, that the overall theory makes sense, but there are a couple scenes where it's not like, it's not quite sure how it's presenting the time travel theory. And one of them, like, I see people kind of come back to questions around the scene where the Sorcerer Supreme is explaining what's going to happen if you remove the Infinity Stones from that timeline to Bruce. And I feel like that scene has always been a little bit muddy to me, because sometimes I'm like, she's saying if you remove it, then the whole, like, from that moment on, like, the branch is messed up. And then Bruce was like, well, we can move it back to the exact right moment. And I was always like, the exact right moment? Like, to the millisecond?
Yeah,
you can remove
but
it?
Here, like, his cap? They're kind of saying, like, it can mend itself if you're close enough.
Exactly. So in some ways, like, it sort of enhances that to me and makes it make more sense, and also makes me really excited to see, like, the way that some of those theories of time interact with what the Sorcerer Supreme knew and what Doctor Strange knows and will know, and how that factors into the Time Stone. But the other thing I was going to say on that point before I forget, in terms of what you're saying, like respecting the MCU, digging into what's come before, like you definitely can tell, and Kate Herron brought this up multiple times, and other folks brought up how much of an MCU nut she is. And I love that the very first scene of Loki, you know, post that replay of the scene from Endgame, is like an exact replica of that kind of iconic scene from Iron Man.
Right, when he's in the
sand. Which I think
some
people pointed out back in the trailers. Right, but it's like the way it's shot is like exactly the same. And it's just kind of it's a fun homage. I don't think it's supposed to mean anything other than that, except for maybe the fact that this is sort of setting up a whole new chapter again.
There's two other peripheral things that I love about the time travel stuff that I want to get into. I brought up the rules of it, but once you accept their explanation and how they've dove into comparing it to how they dealt with it in Endgame and whatnot, like we said,
mm-hmm.
I literally wrote multiverse, all caps, here we go. And what's fascinating about this is Marvel does this amazing job always of making a show fun, entertaining, funny, lighthearted, and then mm-hmm. in the middle of that, giving you these like really heady, heavy sometimes, thoughtful moments. Like think about how in WandaVision, they use sitcoms and you're laughing and they ultimately use that as a vehicle to talk about depression and what do you do when you can't move on and grief. And, right. and all of a sudden it gets really heavy and you're right. like, whoa, where'd that come from? Oh, it's because they've been doing, you know, hinting at this all along, blah, blah. And then like Falcon Winter Soldier uses some humor and like chemistry between the two leads and a buddy cop thing to ultimately talk about racism in America and what does it mean for a black person to become Captain America? And then other things too. As
right.
well. It's like right away off the bat here, what's crazy to me is like they're going a spiritual route kind of. And I'm not going to get into like church doctrine. But when right. when Loki is arguing with Judge Renslayer about, well, you have the wrong person. You got to talk to the Avengers. Well, her answer is no, they did what they were supposed to do. You didn't. And he laughs at that. Why does he laugh at that? Well, because who determines what was supposed to happen or right. not? And her answer is that there's actually right. these three all-powerful timekeepers that are, you know, trying to weave all these multiverses into one timeline to keep things, you know, sane from a multiverse war, you know, breaking out. And what's crazy uh-huh. to me is like, that means you're putting trust in timekeepers who know your future and your past, and they're the ones determining what's right or wrong. Or like, and then the whole conversation with Mobius about how, well, don't think of it as right or wrong or inappropriate or immoral or whatever. It's just the way it is, like the way it's supposed to be. And then they get into this like mm-hmm. predestination versus free will conversation. I'm watching a Marvel movie that's like ridiculous right. and got robots and all these funny jokes. And yet they're somehow at a table talking about, you know, Loki's having to struggle with, what's his purpose? Like, would he still go on with his life if he sees the ending of his life? Right. I know I'm bouncing to a ton of topics, but you know what I mean? Like, right away, we're in this heady discussion of, like, who's in charge of my future?
it's an ambitious route to take. And that's what, I think I was reading the New York Times review, and that's where they pointed out, oh, you know, it's kind of dealing with something tricky and it just addresses it briefly but unsatisfactorily, like this idea that predestination is present here in the MCU. But that's one of those things where I totally disagree, because I think that they're teeing that up to be something that they dig into through this show and maybe beyond, because it's not that they're saying that everything is just predestined, right? Like that's the nature of things. What's so much more interesting to me is that there are people who are there are beings, right, who are forcing everything into this kind of pre-ordered way of it playing out. And that's like a totally different, like pretty, I think, like revolutionary approach here. What I love about it is how well it fits in with what is kind of arguably Loki's most iconic moment from Avengers, right? Like when he's giving that whole speech about, yes. you know, the great lie of freedom, and Owen Wilson brings that up. And by the way, really sort of plays into the fact that this is the Loki from that time period, right? Like right, I noticed that, right. that they work to really remind you this is not Loki that we've seen yep. for the past couple of years. This is the same guy. He's in the same headspace.
I noticed that
and
too.
And the way that they, because I always thought, you know, like I like Whedon's writing a lot, and I like that Whedon kind of likes to play with these bigger ideas. And sometimes he develops them more fully than others. But like, I think that's one of those things that I've always really liked about the way he set up Loki as being like almost like Thanos in that way, where, yeah, you don't agree with him, but he sort of has like an ideology behind it. It's not just, at least to listen to him, like I want to be in charge. it's like, well, I think that, you know, there's this mad scramble, and like here we see him talk about how choice, like the line I thought was so good. He says, for nearly every living thing, choice breeds shame and uncertainty and regret. There's a fork in every road, and the wrong path is always taken.
Well, and Robbie, and it's by like, the way, you know, when he says that rant you're talking about in Avengers 1, I remember thinking like, okay, that's just something he's saying because he wants to rule them, and it's a throwaway line. It's like, hey, he's just an evil guy, and that's what he's saying, you know? But this show is like really hemming in what you're saying, which is that he believes it actually. He's like doubling down here. That's a game changer for me because it's not just that he was a king that needed to rule. He has a justification for it, and he actually believes that.
Right.
There's a difference.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think where it gets really interesting, and where, again, I love Owen Wilson's Mobius character, is that, like, you eventually come to this point where he pins him down because at the one, like, on the one hand, Loki is, like, railing against sort of the injustice of this agency, this kind of bureaucracy that is telling everyone what their lives can and can't be and what their stories have to be. But on the other hand, Loki has been doing the exact same thing. Like, that's what Loki was telling everyone on Earth. Like, you don't need choices because they only result in disaster and tragedy for you. So instead, kind of let me take that on for you. But then when he's confronted with the exact same situation, he rails against it just like people on Earth and the Avengers did. And it's such an interesting place to take that character.
That's why it's such a powerful moment when he follows back up after seeing his Ragnarok stuff, after seeing his Infinity War death, he follows it back up by saying the same thing that he accused them of, but he's admitting he's the one. Remember, he says, yeah, it's me constructing for, you know, by the week to take control or whatever. And it's exact repetition of his line he had said earlier, but now it's in context of him instead of them. So yeah, I agree. Now, there's so much in this scene, okay, because they're diving in and they're watching his past, but then Loki sneaks in later and gets to see his future. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of heavy topics here and a lot of routes I want to go really quick because it kind of felt like a rival to me where if you've seen that movie, I'm going to spoil it for you, but, you know, if – spoiler if you haven't seen it as a warning – you know, she finds out her future and she finds out that she has this beautiful child that she loves that dies really young. And if you could see your future, would you still go through with all the pain that you know you're going to go through knowing that she dies so quickly? And it's this really awful, like, what do I choose to do kind of thing? And I can't help but think about this here, you know, that scene where he actually sees himself choked out. You hear the neck crack amped up, by the way. Holy cow. They turned it so loud. So it's startling that his neck crack is broken.
Yeah, sound effect in particular.
That guy was like, here we go. Turn to 11, baby. But, you know, it's sad because Loki's confronted with that. He always felt like he was destined with glorious purpose. Now, how he handled that was totally inappropriate and wrong all the time and immoral. But here he is seeing his quote unquote glorious purpose, and it's ultimately to just be choked out by Thanos in a few years.
Right.
And that's hard. That's hard for him. I felt for him. I also understand it. And I mean, would you still choose to even go back if you could, if you knew that's what was going to happen? Because you also got to see some beautiful moments like the healing with your dad and your brother. It's just there was a lot going on there. That's heavy.
And by the way, the way like that underneath all of those scenes that we've seen before, I mean, Natalie Holt's score, that's one of the moments that really stuck out to me. The same way that like we talked about what Christoph Beck did that really elevated that scene in WandaVision when they're in Sokovia and they're watching the Dick Van Dyke show. Like that was kind of this for me. Like as he's watching that and this the somber cello there, I thought made some of those moments hit even kind of harder and definitely in a new way.
Right. Another thing I love about this scene, though, is did you catch the line? Shout out to us, by the way. Did you catch the line that Owen Wilson says to him when he says, I don't see anything mischievous here? And he's pretty much pointing out that by the time he's in Avengers, this doesn't feel very mischievous. This is just evil. You're killing people and taking over, which is the discussion we had last week. I thought that was really funny.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Where is that line of the God of Mischief, where does that stop? And where is it just like, hey, you're just a bad dude at this point.
Like whenever he's like, no, it's, a, you know, I'm a liberator. And he's like, liberator of what? Eyeballs?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And it's this right. weird juxtaposition of he's trying to kind of break Loki down and admit that he is a bringer of pain. But then I'm kind of like, for what purpose though? Like maybe once he accepts that, he right. thinks he'll change him. And that's what brings me to my next point. Just like every other iteration of Loki, I have no idea what's going on. Again, I don't know. Like when he says, like, yeah. you can trust me with stuff. Do you trust him when he's actually grieving? Is he really sad? Then he laughs and realizes how ridiculous it is that he can't control it. And then mm-hmm. Owen Wilson confronts him and he's genuinely sad, but that's only following right after he snuck out again and broke right. out and tried to still use the Tesseract. Like, what? I can't ever get a read on Loki, and that's the point. I never know if he's actually making character change or not. And yeah. that's the whole point. That's the whole point, by the way.
No,
Owen
yeah.
Wilson is arguing that he can change, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's even, right? Like, it's what Thor says in Ragnarok. He's like, you know, we go round and round, same thing. Like, I trust you, you betray me. Like, that again, the show is digging into, like, everything about Loki that I've ever found interesting. This show is digging into and enhancing. And that scene that we're talking about where it shows all of the kind of scenes from Loki's past and his future from the perspective of this version. We talked a lot about how worried we were that this show was going to minimize Loki's story, right? Like my fear was that you're going to take something that I thought closed off so well. And I've seen even interviews where Tom Hiddleston said he thought that the scene in Infinity War was so final, was so kind of complete. It was such a great closing moment for that character to tie up that arc. And I was like, how can you do anything except damage by reopening that? But here, they clearly feel the same way. They respect the story, and they somehow, in taking this approach, the same way that they kind of did with that episode 8 of WandaVision, inject so much more meaning into these moments that I already kind of felt resonated with me. You know, like the moment you're talking about with Odin and Ragnarok, and the moment with Thor at the end of Ragnarok, and then obviously that Infinity War scene. But the one that I have to talk about before we forget and move on, I love how much the MCU is now just leaning into making Thor the Dark World a pivotal moment in the Infinity Saga.
That's and like I'm right saying, up your alley because you've always thought it has been.
Yeah, I mean, well, because, you know, we talked about from the very beginning how it's the first time the Infinity Stones are mentioned by name and how, especially like with Endgame and the significance of that moment whenever Thor is kind of able to go back and have the conversation with his mother. But one thing that I honestly never picked up on or never thought about.
Let me pause you and guess what you're going to say because I also never picked up on this. Can I pause you? This is a guess.
Yes,
this is just chemistry. I'm going to try. I swear we never talked about this. The thing I never picked up on was that Loki tried to intentionally lead them to Thor.
Yes.
And it mistakenly led the Dark Elves to his mother. Is that a retcon or do we just always miss that?
Okay. I don't know. Cause I rewatched that scene and I think it's maybe a bit of both.
Yeah.
Because I definitely could see it being, it's interesting though, right? Because after Thor's broken him out, you know, Thor's talking about how Loki had his mother's tricks, but he had her trust. And then Loki's like, oh, well, you know, what good did that do? Like, did you protect her? Like, did you, like, obviously her trust was misplaced because you let her die. And that's sort of Loki's perspective in that moment. And now it's like looking back, is that him being just super defensive? You know, like, did he realize whenever they kind of told him and you see him all broken down in that cell after her death, like, it does kind of, again, it enhances this movie that was so often written off as such a, like, non-entry in the MCU.
It's kind of like Rogue One in that way. I always say that, where I don't think when they made Thor the Dark World, they intentionally plotted that Loki was going to lead them to Thor. I don't think that was the point.
I think you're probably right.
But it's an easy way to go back and add that, and it doesn't offend anything from the original movie. It just enhances, actually. And you're like, oh, that makes more sense now. Oh, you know, and that's a better story. So it's almost like a retcon, but in a good way.
Yeah.
To kind of fuel a moment that works better now.
It does, and it does make that so much more brutal. And then whenever Mobius, like whenever Loki says, you know, I'm going to kill you, and he says, oh, like you did your mother, it's like, holy cow.
Yes. He's kind of attacking him there. You know, you brought up the greatest hits thing as he's watching those moments in Ragnarok and enhancing those for you. And I agree. But that led me to one of my three concerns, if you will, not like things that didn't work or not. It's just like three times I was like, ooh, for a second. Okay. And one of them is just like, I still have a little bit of that careful a little bit on the main timeline stuff. You know, I know that enhances that moment, but every time we get away from that, you're starting to flirt with that. You know, if Loki can just go into another multiverse or if he can do these things or whatever, I just have this tiny hesitation of like, okay, but Loki's story was cool already. It was already good. And I know you and I have argued on this podcast about that forever. And I know you and I on the phone have argued about how those things can still work, right? Like the counter argument is Into the Spider-Verse, right? Where there's all these multiple realities you find out about, but you still care about the main Spider-Man you met, the one you know.
Right, right.
But what's interesting with this is we already have movies and movies and movies of history of Loki. So we're not just introduced to it so where they can say, hey, here's all these versions of Loki, but this is the one you really care about. It's like, well, the one I really care about is already the one that was in the other timeline. So just be careful. That's all. I just ask you to be careful with my emotions on that, okay?
No, I'm with you. Because also you just don't want to – I mean, the reason why I think that I'm not yet concerned is because I have a sense, like I said, that Kate Herron and Tom Hiddleston and the folks behind the show have such respect for the Infinity Saga that I don't think they would do anything through the course of this entire show, like by the time we get through episode 6, that would make the Infinity Saga somehow like less impactful. Like, I mean, they could, right? Like they certainly could do things and maybe they're not intending to and they accidentally do. So I'm not saying it can happen, but I feel like they have to be aware of what a sort of tricky line they're threading here.
Right. But then that means you know what my second hesitation was on that same, you know, in that same vein.
Right, right.
Which is just in the scene where Loki finds the Infinity Stones that are used as paperweights. Then he goes to the screen and has this big moment of, is this the greatest power in the universe? And the guy next to him is kind of like, yeah, kind of is. I was a little bit like, okay, just hold on, guys. Everyone just hold on.
Right.
Let's, you know, and I get it. I think the reason I'm totally okay with it right now is because they're really putting an emphasis on the TVA kind of being this standalone thing. It's outside time. It's outside reality. It's not in the universe we know in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But did I feel a little bit weird? It's kind of like in Black Panther when they make the Stark Tech joke. I'm like, okay. Does it ruin the movie for me? No. Do I dislike that scene? No. But did you need to include this little jab at the other thing that I already know is so great?
Uh-huh.
And like, if they just even show the Infinity Stones, maybe I'd be okay with it. But the joke that they're like paperweights, I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to say they're no good here. Right. So I still liked it. But I was just a little bit like, I know the Infinity Stones are the all-powerful thing. I've been told that for 12 years, okay? And I've been told that if someone gets them like Thanos, they would be the most powerful being in the universe. I've been told that for 12 years. So don't try to, in 12 minutes, all of a sudden make me think, oh, that's not true, actually. Well, if you could control this. And So again, I loved the show. I have to give so many disclaimers. I think it's amazing and I'm excited to see where it goes, truly. But that's the other time where I was like, oh, okay. And then my third thing because of that was, because I was feeling unsettled there, you're going to hate this. I thought the music at times was a little jarring. Like, cause like that moment in particular, they're trying to make musically and visually this moment of Loki realizing this is the greatest power. And I just didn't, I don't think I want that. So there was a little bit of like, ooh, that's a little jarring at times. That's all.
Right. No, that's fair. And I need to rewatch to see. I mean, the Infinity Stone
thing. That scene in particular.
That's so interesting because we played around with this a bit in WandaVision when we were addressing kind of some of the multiverse stuff. But looking at the comics, which again, the MCU only kind of pulls from in its own ways. Like it's never a one for one thing. When you're looking at the events in the comics, like you're looking at the big things, you kind of have Infinity Gauntlet, like which in sort of Infinity War, and then you have later on, like in the mid 2000s, you have Civil War, Secret Invasion, and then you have Secret Wars. Not the original 80s one, which was kind of a standalone thing, but the one that came out in 2015, written by Jonathan Hickman. And the reason I bring all that up is, as we finished the Infinity Saga, you and I, before we even started the podcast, would have these conversations where it's like, well, what do you do? They already worked up to Thanos so well. They set up Thanos as being like borderline invincible. How do you top that? Because it's like the Dragon Ball Z problem that I always joke about, where it's like you can't just every time someone comes into the picture, they're just like fractionally stronger than the person that came before. And the thing is, right, like even if you have Galactus or whoever come in, and I'm sure Galactus will come in at some point, and you say, well, they're 10 times more powerful than Thanos, well, like who cares, right? Because Thanos still managed to blink half of the universe out of existence and conceivably could have taken the entire universe out with the Infinity Stone. So like at some point, it doesn't really matter how much stronger someone else is, because what are they going to do? Like destroy the entire universe more? Like it can't work where you're just upping the ante. And so you and I always said that the two routes they could go would either be the kind of Secret Wars route that I was talking about in terms of comic stuff, or like the Civil War route in terms of comic stuff, where it's either like a political thing or it's like a like multiversal, like catastrophic, almost like natural disaster take. And what I love about what this show is making me think, and obviously we're going to go in a lot more, is that Falcon Winter Soldier, you know, with like what we got there at the end with Contessa coming in, is sort of setting that up, and with Sharon Carter on the political side. And now on this side, rather than introducing some new big bad that's bigger than Thanos, it's more, I think, setting up this idea that it's like the quality of the multiverse itself, of time itself, and the fact that like we got this. I thought like the animation, you know, the background of kind of how the TVA even came into existence was so interesting, and in some ways really lines up with what kind of Hickman's Secret Wars did. But whereas Hickman's Secret Wars is about all of these multiverses being destroyed at the juncture of planet Earth and eventually kind of coming down to the final two universes there, this is setting that up as being like a past event that they've already kind of recovered from. And so I'm curious to see like if it's sort of setting that up as something that's going to come again, or if they're just using that purely as prologue. But either way, the reason I was okay with the Infinity Stone thing is because in that kind of build up to Secret Wars, which I love so much, I've talked about the Hickman Avengers run sort of ad nauseum on here. There are some really powerful scenes where in the effort to kind of push back this multiversal collapse, they go on this mission to get the Infinity Stones, and they're going to use them to sort of protect the Earth and to protect their universe. And they succeed once, but then the Infinity Stone sort of in the act of doing this kind of universal work kind of cease to exist because they only work within their native universe, which makes sense because the way we've been introduced to the Infinity Stones, going back from Thor the Dark World to Guardians to Wong's thing in Infinity War, like they're like ingrained, they're a part of the universe, like the universe kind of formed from them and they're the singularities. So it makes sense that they are like the core power within that universe, but that when you take them out of that, they would have no significance at all. And that's why I'm okay with this, is like the crisis that they're sort of setting up potentially, the world of the TVA, it's not superseding Thanos or anything we've seen so far. It's just like outside of it, which is so much better to me and so much smarter than any other route that they could have gone with this, at least as it looks so far.
Yes, that's the important point. The last thing you just said there, the reason I was okay with it was because instead of thinking about it as who's stronger or is this the most power in the universe, as Loki says, instead of thinking of it that way, I like the way Mobius talks about it, where it's not necessarily a power. They're just policing that time progresses. Like, you don't get a sense that the TVA is going to try to take over one reality themselves and use the stones in that one or whatever, or that that Loki could become the leader of it and they could be an army that's physically more powerful than Thanos, right? You see what I'm saying? It's different.
Right.
This is just, they're just trying to make sure, they're not good or bad. They're trying to make sure it happens. By the way, they're not good or bad right now as we know them, but they're trying to just make sure it happens. And that's easier for my mind to get around. You know, but this leads me to my question section, which is, I was just wondering, and this doesn't even, this is kind of rhetorical, doesn't need an answer, but it did make me wonder, like, could they have weaved the story in such a way that Thanos getting all the stones, Thanos snapping, was the event that caused the Time Police to come out of the TVA and go arrest somebody? Like, could they have made that moment of Infinity War and Endgame even more impactful? Because instead they said that's what was supposed to happen. And then the Avengers go back and that was supposed to happen. The one thing that wasn't supposed to happen was that Loki was not supposed to get away. Could they have done this same story but manipulated in such a way that Thanos was the thing that wasn't supposed to happen? I haven't spent enough time thinking about that. There might be ways to poke holes in that argument, but I was just wondering that.
Well, and I hope that they'll dig into that more. Because if they don't, like if they leave dangling like why that was supposed to happen, then I think I'll be a little bit disappointed. Not that they have to provide like a totally full explanation.
Right.
But
who determines it? That's important. Right, who's determining why it's supposed to happen?
That's why one of my big questions is like, who are the timekeepers? Are they even real? Right? We haven't seen them. Are they an invention?
And that's what I want to spend so much time next week talking about. Like those theories.
But the last thing I was going to say on all this really is I think what's interesting about that, like what you're saying, is that clearly what Thanos did is the more destructive act, right? Like it's the more evil thing. It's the thing that like were the TVA folks like good, like a force for good, then they would have stopped him, but they didn't. Which I think is why it's so interesting. I'm not saying they're a force for bad either. It's like they are not concerned with making good or bad things happen, with preventing deaths.
That's not their job.
It's purely like there is a timeline that they have decided should exist. And that's why, I want to see why it was that Thanos getting the Infinity Stones was part of that. And by the way, how that plays into, again, that scene at the end of Infinity War when Doctor Strange says that basically happens in every possible outcome except for one.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. There's going to have to be a lot of heady work done because we're starting to get so deep into Time Stone and time travel and Endgame and this that like, yeah, there's going to be some, not conflictions or inconsistencies, but they're going to have to do their homework on getting this all straightened out, which I'm excited for. Few questions in closing. I called you about this, so full disclosure, I've already asked you about this, but one of the things I was thinking while I was watching this is, why doesn't Loki just want to get reset? why not be okay with just resetting? Like, before he goes through the whole process of seeing his future, why wouldn't he want to just go back to the 2012 version and continue with his life? And you had a good answer back to that. But you know what I'm saying? Because he's like kind of resisting it at first, and maybe it's because he doesn't know what it is or whatever. But in my mind, that wouldn't be so bad. Just go back to your original timeline.
Well, I think, I think it's so interesting because at first I don't think understands. I mean, he sees the person being reset and it looks like him just being disintegrated. And then, and he asks Mobius, are you taking me somewhere to kill me? And Mobius says, no, that's the room that you were just in. So even Mobius looks at being reset as something kind of akin to death because, right, you're losing your current consciousness. Like in that moment, that version of Loki that is now existing and aware, like would cease, it would just be merged back with the one we've already known. So it would be a death to the extent that death is sort of the blinking out of consciousness. But what I love is that of all the characters that would really take issue with being sort of just swept back into some preordained plan.
Like willfully ignorant.
Right.
Matrix style, red pill, blue pill. It wouldn't be Loki. Exactly. He would want to know.
And that's why that conversation between him and Mobius has so many layers to it. Because I think under all of that, I'm sure that if Loki were just to say at any point, you know what, fine. Like if that's my path, if it's always going to happen, just take me back. Like, and I'm sure that Mobius would allow that. But the fact that like they're getting it, like, I think that's part of, you were asking what he's doing there. He's prodding him because he knows that based on his actions and his stories, that he's someone that kind of rails against. I mean, it goes back to the first Thor movie, right? Like where Loki reacts so violently to this idea that he was just part of some plan for a peace treaty between Jotunheim and Asgard. Like that he wasn't destined to be anything. It was just, he was kind of a pawn. And that's like something that he is always going to be so resistant to, that I think Mobius knows that and is prodding because he thinks he can use his help if he gets him kind of on board with their project, which, by the way, we haven't even really talked about. So that's maybe a good place to end it.
Well, that's my last two remaining questions, is one which we already covered, which is what's quote unquote supposed to happen, and who determines that? Like, truly, who determines that? And let's not get into that yet, because we kind of talked about it, and we're going to go more into that next week. And then my last question is the cliffhanger at the end, right?
Right.
Who are they trying to catch? How can it be Loki again? What does that mean? And I don't know, but that was when I'm immediately intrigued, because now we're getting into like Stranger Things type vibe. That kind of cliffhanger is more like WandaVision. It's not like a cliffhanger in Foz where it's like, oh, what's going to happen to, you know, John Walker, right? That was a cliffhanger, but this is a different nature. This is like a mind-bending, like, wait, what?
Right.
Even Loki says, excuse me, pardon me. And I love it. I can't wait.
And this is where the Friends from Work Slack is going to be so fun, because
true.
So much of WandaVision, like so much of what made that experience so fun, was everyone's kind of like frantic theorizing as we got new information, and every episode seemed to kind of unlock something else. And, you know, what was kind of a red herring and what was something that was pointing us towards a larger thing. And that's why I think this is such a perfect time for us to open the Slack channel up. And so we're really excited. Yeah. What did you think about the final scene there? And where do you think this is heading? That's the place. Give us your theory.
I love what you said earlier, just to reiterate. With WandaVision, we were like, guys, easy, easy, easy. Don't let it take away the joy of the show. With this, I'm like, everything's fair game, baby. Let's go. Let's hear the theories. Let's hear everything. I think that adds to the joy on this show. I know that sounds like I'm hypocritical, but it's just a different vibe for me. I'm ready to hear whatever you think is going to happen.
I'm right there with you.
That Slack channel is going to be really fun. Also, just in general, you can always hit us up on social media at the FFW Podcast. And maybe sometimes if you aren't on the Slack and you send us a message, we can post a cool theory that we got from you guys either way on Slack. But
Or you can head to theffwpodcast.com. A lot of folks use that to email us if you're not a big social media person. And we check that as well. And again, that's where you can also get all sorts of other stuff like the rewatch if you want to go back through, or those Friends from Work t-shirts.
Sorry, this was a little bit of a longer episode. As you can tell, Robbie and I are just so excited to be back in the swing of things, right? Are you kidding me? And so, yeah, it's one of those times again where I'm like ahead of time, hey, I know there's only a finite amount of time we can do this, but we're just going to let it rip. And it's going to take a while. There's a lot to cover. And yeah, humble brag here. We have seen episode 2. So we can't wait for you guys to see that. And then we'll talk about it next week, Thursday. So just as a reiteration, today was unique that this episode came out on Wednesday because we had already seen it and we wanted it to be special. Like if you watch it right away in the morning, you can get our podcast. But the rhythm we're going to go on for the next 5 weeks is the main episodes are going to come out on Thursdays. So kind of mark your calendar for that, just as a reminder. And yeah, I cannot wait to get into more of it with you guys. So thank you so much for listening, for making this show special for Robbie and I. And we can't wait to see what's in store. So we'll see you next time on Friends from Work.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Ritual, we're celebrating all moms this Mother's Day, current and aspiring. So whether you're looking for fertility support, natal choline, or our best-selling clinically backed prenatal, we've got you covered. Find your Ritual. Go to ritual.com/podcast and for a limited time, get 40% off your first month. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Based on net sales from industry data, including Nielsen IQ, Stackline, and Numerator as of Q4 2024 and top 5 products.